Greetings from Long Time No See, the podcast. Every week, we'll be inviting two blindfolded comedians to answer a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Now, let's remove those blindfolds and start the show.
Hi!
What would your opening line with your celebrity crush be?
Loved you in Harry Potter.
Worst date you've been on?
A man bit my neck mole off once.
You did what?
A man bit my neck mole off.
Oh my God, Jack almost fell off his chair.
Be sure to follow and subscribe to the podcast.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
How's this? I might need to adjust my system a little bit.
Consequence Podcast Network.
And welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org. Consequence and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thank you, as always, for making your way here, for checking out the series. Hit that subscribe button so you can keep up with the entire series. We do three new interviews every single week, new and every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Makes it a great way to keep up with your favorite artists. And discover those new ones, you can grab us any of the usual spots. Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from, subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Don't forget to also give a rating, leave a review while you're at it. That always helps out so much. We've had some great guests on lately, including Beth Ditto of Gossip, actor Skeet Ulrich. He's in the new show Parrish on AMC Plus. We also got to talk about Scream, you know, playing Billy Loomis. Maggie Lindemann was here. Guy Garvey of Elbow, comedian Martin Amini, actors Nathan Stewart Jarrett and George McKay to talk about the movie Femme. We chatted with Rudy Mancuso about Musica, out now on Prime Video. Hamish Linklater, he portrays Abraham Lincoln in Manhunts on Apple TV Plus. And we started out the month with Gary Clark Jr., just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. And that's me, Kyle Meredith, today talking with my buddy Stone Gossard of Pearl Jam. The band are back with a brand new album called Dark Matter that we're going to be discussing. He'll tell us about the joy and abandonment they had while making the record with producer Andrew Watt, how it came together so much more quicker than Gigatime, and working in a way they did in the early days of the group that they hadn't done for quite some time. On the guitar side, Stone's going to talk about how he finds space in a song with the addition of Watt and Josh Klinghoffer in the mix, why we never see him playing back-to-back with Mike McCready, and how his focus is completely different than Mike's when it comes to making the album. Interestingly, Stone's also going to reveal that The Cure were a very big influence on the record, as well as U2. And in fact, with U2 in mind, Stone will tell us why he doesn't want Pearl Jam to play The Sphere, and then gives us his thoughts on the Darkness's Justin Hawkins, his deconstruction of Dark Matter that he did on YouTube. Very fun. And maybe most excitingly, says that he'd love for Pearl Jam to start on a follow-up with Andrew Watt right away. All that and more, we're digging into Dark Matter. It's Kyle Meredith with Stone Gossard of Pearl Jam.
What's up, Kyle?
There's a new Pearl Jam record finally in our midst with Dark Matter. I don't know what to say at this point, because I compliment you so often on the projects that you're a part of, whether it's Painted Shield or Brad, but especially this record. There's not a Pearl Jam record that I don't love, but I absolutely love this record. There is something special going on here. Congratulations on this one.
Thank you. It feels that way. Sometimes it's incremental, the sort of steps you can take, and sometimes you get a little bit more movement, you know, a little bit more shifting in terms of just making it fresh again and making sure that it just feels energized, you know. It feels like there's good energy, good vibrations going.
Well, it's apparently connecting. I mean, what did I read? You got a number one single out of it on the rock and alternative charts, which I guess hasn't officially happened since Given to Flies. So, and there was a lot about, there's something about this record. I started thinking in my unofficial fan trilogy that it has now become, because like Yield and Backspacer and now Dark Matter all have this brightness to them more so than I think any of the other records. There's something about brightness on, but this record has that too. There is a brightness to this record. It's a happier record, even though the lyrics, I'm not saying, are always happy. It feels like a happier record, that energy that you're talking about.
Yeah. I think there is some joy in the abandonment of the playing and some of the confidence of just playing a simple song and just fucking knowing that you could just pound it out and knowing that you can do it and knowing that it makes you feel good. And I think that there's some of that. I think in a lot of ways it's an open record. It's open to the gravity and the sadness of the world, but it also infuses it with like, we're gonna dance too, you know, or something like that.
No, it's there. The dancing is there. And it came together. I mean, when you all talk about it coming together quick, like what exactly does that mean? Because I was laughing because the last time you and I talked, and I think I talked with Jeff not long afterwards, both of you, now I look back and I see that you're being a little coy, like, oh, you know, the record, we're working on it. You know, there's that whole dance that I think you all have to do. But like when you talk about this record coming together quick, what does that mean?
I think in this particular record, and particularly compared to Gigaton, I think Gigaton was a record where individually all of us wrote a bunch of songs and we sort of brought those songs and the kind of the raw demo forms ended up being sort of built upon. And in a sense, that was fun and exciting because the nature, the very essence of what you first were excited about when you wrote the song stayed with that track. And it's sort of, we built around that, but it's also a little bit of a layered and it's a little bit of an insular sort of approach to playing because everyone is sitting with your song in a room with an engineer, as opposed to interacting with it in its formation. So these songs were all interacted with a lot in their formation, meaning that if somebody had a riff, they're bringing it in and immediately, we need a bridge. That second verse goes too long. We got to do this. You know, this chord is bugging me. How do we get from that chord to the next chord without having all that other stuff in there that doesn't matter? I don't, you know, those sorts of ideas, you know, with Ed, you know, and his perspective in terms of like where he's hearing a melody and how he could, you know, kind of get through a part and sort of make it work. And Andrew, in terms of his, you know, passion for the band and love for, you know, sort of him falling in love with the band and being very excited about specific things about the band that he wanted to make sure that he helped capture, you know, like that he helped bring out our personalities that sometimes were forward and sometimes weren't, was trying to get all of our personalities and our energies, you know, coming forward. And then all of us just with our opinions. So everything got worked over very quick. You had to have very tough skin. And, but what we discovered again, and this is very similar to how we wrote early on, is, you know, bring a riff in and you kind of got to play around with it in the room. And the nature of that is somebody's going to screw up and do something that's not that. And everyone's going to go, ooh, that's cool too. What's that? So why, maybe we need some of that, whatever that just was. So it's that melting pot of like, you know, throwing yourself into the fray and not being in control in terms of your song. And then knowing that something magical can happen. And that's sort of reaffirms our formative belief that, you know, being in a band has a special magic to it. And it's hard, you know, and as you get older and more successful and sort of you can do whatever you want to do, it's harder to throw yourself back into that because it can be scary and it can be sort of, you have to trust your, you know, your bandmates to lift you up.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Stone Gossard of Pearl Jam. Having someone like Andrew, who also shares a little bit in the songwriting to some degree, I guess, and then Josh as well, does that change the makeup of the band? Is it harder to find your space in a song when now there's that many cooks?
I personally, and I think everyone would probably say the same thing, is I feel like kind of louder on this record than I've been, you know, in a while, or particular parts that I thought were exciting sort of have moved, you know, in mixes, you can kind of get, there's lots of ways to hear songs, and the mix is one of the most, that's a massive artistic choice you're making. You're making a lot of big choices there. So I felt, you know, more appreciated and more heard by Andrew in terms of the subtle things that I do, not necessarily just like, okay, here's a riff and do you like it, but more like, I keep hearing a note here and here, and I'm not sure what notes they should be, but I keep wanting to go to this or this, or maybe it's a wah thing, or, you know, somebody who helped me navigate that, and I think he did that with everyone, was able to make everybody sound great. Honestly, Mike's playing more leads than ever before, you know, like out there, sort of aggressive, very, you know, off the cuff. He didn't play anything. None of that stuff was worked over, you know, all of it was done very quickly, two or three takes. But Andrew is a master at how to take those two or three takes and really bring out the sort of essence. And it's an imperfect process, and Andrew's imperfect, but he did a great job of pushing us along a path that we hadn't been pushed in a while, I think, so it sounds fresh.
Yeah, it's interesting about the solos, you know, so much of the spotlight gets put on like you and Jeff's relationship because it goes back so far. But with you and Mike, especially when you have that, you know, such a focus on the solos and stuff like that, like how has your relationship changed? And maybe specifically on this record, you know, it's not like we ever see the two of you all playing back to back, you and Mike.
Like on the stage, like kind of like, yeah, it's kind of, and I see, here's the thing about back to back is you have to be able to play your part and maneuver yourself. Okay. And I'm always the guy that looks like if he fucking tries this, he's going to fuck up his. So being as shitty as I am in terms of my, you know, in terms of that particular quality, that would preclude me from trying to do back to back with him. We will, but I'll fall over and then we'll laugh and the song will stop.
But you and Mike, like, you know, Vander is putting more emphasis on the big solos for him. Like, did that mean the same thing for you?
The things that I'm excited about in terms of making a record, they're different than Mike. So I'm thinking about arrangements. I'm thinking about the, you know, whether or not, what's the vocal melody? How does the vocal melody fit against the rhythm of the, you know, the guitar? What needs to go away? What needs to come back? Like, I love those kinds of, I'm an arranger, you know, more than anything. So, and as a player, I felt like the parts that I cared about were forward as though they were solos. You know, to me, they're solos. It's like, if I can hear me and this sort of melody that I created with this, you know, one note that might be in the key, but might not be in the key, but you kind of get used to it. And it turns out that it, you know, there's something about that. Those are the kinds of things that I get excited about. So in the same way that, you know, and I think both of us, Mike is an excellent songwriter and an excellent soloist, and I can play a solo and look forward to doing more sort of, I need to, that would be good for me to sort of expand my range into that and be more comfortable improvising in the same way that Mike is. But so maybe that's the next record.
Maybe that's the next one. You hear it first. There's going to be another record. No, that's the thing though. I've always loved your guitar playing because your riffs, as you say, do come off like solos. I can sing along to your riffs, you know, thinking about like even the 10 stuff, but of course, like Satan's Bed, that's one of my favorites, you know, that's ever come, those type of things. And the record, it starts out with you, right? Like Scared of Fear. Is that's yours?
Yeah. Riffs of mine in there in different songs, you know, but it's whether it's a formative riff or a addition, you know? And so that's a very stone. That song was written in the first, literally 1 hour of being in the studio with Andrew, and I had those two, you know, I had those basically three parts. We rearranged them completely from what they were to start out with in terms of like the number of times each one repeats and sort of where the what was a B section turned into basically the bridge, you know. So it was ripped open, its heart was pulled out, and within an hour, you know, and now I listen to it and I go, well, that's the way it should have gone. You know, it doesn't feel like it's wrong. It feels like it's right.
So I guess, you know, in the past, we could look at the liner notes and be like, oh, that's a Stone song, you know, Thin Air, that's a Stone song or whatever. Like, are there Stone songs on this album in the same way then?
Yeah, that's one of them for sure. Upper Hand is sort of, you know, a song that I kind of brought in the main parts, but again,
like that song's a journey, Upper Hands.
Yeah, and it became more of a journey in terms of we built it, you know, we built the nuts of it were the, you know, the sort of the guts of the song, but the outro and the intro were sort of, you know, expanding on where you could go and us kind of experimenting a little bit and trying to like get it to do a full something.
What's the end of the song Won't Tell? It really sounds like, even though maybe it's by accident, but I thought this sounds like a Cure send up, like a little hat tip.
we reference The Cure a lot while making it, you know, because of their, again, them and their style. They teach you the power of the simplest little melody that has a unique, you know, lyrical quality. It just, if it feels like it's a voice, if it feels like it's a, has a lyric almost, and certain melodies, the way they lay over the riff, they just, they sing. And finding those things is like magic. And you don't have to be a, you don't have to be a musician to find those things, you know? And that's the magic we discover, is just like, oh, this, I mean, it sounds, you could be the greatest guitar player in the world, but you could, you know, a 10-year-old could learn how to play that in an hour. You know, in terms of just the physical, just, it's just back here, this note, and then this note, you know, that's it, you know, like, and everyone would play it differently, but that sums up the why I love music, playing music, is that the discovery that you can do it falling down, you know.
I've got a 16-year-old and I walk in and, you know, there's the electric in his hand, there's the acoustic in his hand, and I'm hearing plucking away. And I just want to go, half the time I just want to go, that's a song. Not a song I've heard before. It's just like, you've got a song right there.
Yeah. And it's, that's the nature of being an editor, is knowing that when you hear somebody, and half the time they're not even aware of it. Half the time they're not even aware that what they were just going from one thing, and then they just hit a chord, but then they were going to play something else. But in that moment of their transition, that little, you know, and that's what I live for, is those, like, those stumbles into the sublime.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle and Meredith with Stone Gossard of Pearl Jam. It was like, a, you know, you've got the beautiful outro of like Waiting for Stevie. I mean, Running is such a fun song. Wreckage sounds like a song that we're still going to be hearing as a hit song on the radio 20 years from now.
Yeah.
You know, where did that one come from?
That was, Andrew and Ed sitting down and just playing with a couple acoustic guitars, you know, and we built that thing, you know. I think Ed had a melody and an idea going, and it was, you know, it was time for a different mood. You know, we had hit 3 or 4 or 5 heavy kind of, you know, we'd already done that, and we were looking for sort of another gear. And I think, you know, Ed had that going on, and we just, and it came pretty late. I think it was the second session at Shangri-La. And and that song keeps revealing itself to me. You know, it was a slow burn in terms of my understanding of that song, but it's turned into one of my favorites now. And yeah, that's also one where it's like, I've got some little trinkly kind of parts on it that Andrew said, that's like a Cure thing. It's like, I was playing like a little picking pattern that just bells in, and you almost can't even hear it, but it's just sort of, it's just kind of bubbling in there. And he really fell in love with that. It was a definite Cure reference where he was like, that's Cure. But I just love that, you know, that just everybody bringing their box of their favorite sort of, you know, artist into the studio, it just makes for this mix that's like, it has references, but it's not, it doesn't feel like it's, too close.
Yeah, it's not a Cure tribute album. By any means.
But Won't Tell is like, I mean, it's just, and it references you too. I mean, it's, you know, they're our heroes, you know, I mean, that band is, they show everybody something about songwriting and that simplicity of melody and rhythm and lyric. But that's one that, yeah, that's just like a Jeff Ament song that he came in and he had a dream about this lyric that it came to him, and this sort of this melody, and he played it for us, and we got this, and he had a demo, and again we just flipped it on its head and tried different things, and Ed took the lyric and tweaked it and made it all, you know, filtered it through his own filter, and it just magic again, letting go, like letting your art get destroyed by your bandmates, works out.
Letting your art get destroyed. Did you catch any of the Sphere shows for you two?
I didn't.
I had to pass it up too. I had two chances to go out there, and I don't know why I kept missing it. But man,
I that interested in it, honestly. I everyone, you know, Jeff and Ed both saw it and thought it was amazing. And, you know, I'm sure it was amazing. That immersiveness and sort of like what you could do with if a visual is all around with music and with, you know, I'm interested to see where that building goes and how it gets used in the future. I think there's going to be somebody who takes that building and does something, you know, more transcendent. I want to see you two on stage. I want to hear more stripped down, not more strapped in.
Well, and plus, I love what Bono does with a catwalk. And I don't mean that in a corny way. I mean, like, you know, the catwalk can be a little bit popish, but he really does use that to the, like my favorite U2 moments are when he and the Edge are out there, you know, and Until the End of the World. That's like,
oh my God. Better song than that?
That might be my all time favorite U2 song.
I love that song.
Would you ever want to play the Sphere?
No, God, I personally, as soon as people started talking about my set, please don't ask me. I hear there's some work involved. I hear you got to really get the in-ears working just right for you to hear yourself. And it's not a musical, I'm sure U2 sounded amazing in there. And I'm sure they spent months and, you know, making it work, but that's not one of those clubs where you step in and, hey, it sounds good in here right now. It's like, fuck, I'm pulling up on this. This is great. Or like cameras on you, but it's also on this giant grouper fish that they've got, you know, sort of imaged over the top of you. And
yeah, and for the spontaneity of a Pearl Jam show, I guess you kind of just, that goes out the window. Like you can't really pull it off. Right. Well, I want to ask really quickly about what's up for Loose Groove this year too, because I mean, what, we're getting another Painted Shield first? Is that right?
Yeah. Painted Shield's got a record coming out in a few weeks, and I think. And Brittany Davis, Image Issues, doing really well. Brittany's band is amazing. So great. Wait till you see them. They're going to blow you away. And Tiger Cubs, been on tour with Pornoful Pyros. They're playing great. They're in the middle of another musical project right now, making some more music to release soon. And so lots going on. So fun.
Yeah. It used to be, we'd get one of your, like we'd get a Brad album on the off years of a Pearl Jam record or something like that. And that's just like thrown out the window at this point, like Pearl Jam, Painted Shield, let's do it all at once. And Brittany, I mean, she's doing double time too, I guess. So,
it's all just about keeping things moving along and doing things in smaller increments and just still not, you know, siloing everything so much and just kind of, I mean, I like to be busy with projects, and I'm fascinated by sort of those projects and collaboration and sort of what excites me to kind of go, I'll show up at the studio and like be involved in whatever, you know, I'll help pay for this record because I love this band, or I'll help, you know, be involved in this because it makes me feel like it's something worth pursuing. I'm compelled. So I just keep doing that, basically.
Well, you've had a good track record of it. I mean, Loose Groove, the stuff, I was thinking even all the way back to those beginnings and just how much of that stuff I still listen to. I know I've referenced the Chicago Cab soundtrack in here before, but that's a great go-to for some of the classic stuff. And what the other, like classic stuff, last time we talked, you had mentioned that you were thinking about, you were planning maybe about doing the reissues for Interiors and Bayleaf. Is that still, do you have that game plan?
Yeah, list, but it's, we're not there. It won't be this year, but we're going to definitely do more vinyl. I mean, that's going to be part of what we want to do, is sort of do reissues, limited reissues of stuff that people connected with back in the day, and sort of redo those. So
been looking forward to that. Of course, I'm looking forward to the shows this year with Pearl Jam. Getting back to indie, since I never got to see that one last year. But yeah, I mean, here you guys are, another tour. You've got another chunk of songs to fit into a set list that just is dense with the greatest songs of all time.
Looking forward to it. We're thinking about kind of how we're going to do the show, and we got some new production that's going to be cool. And there's lots of things going on. So we're excited about next steps. We're excited about making more music. I think this record was an energizing experience for everyone. It was a little bit of a journey, but working with Andrew and just sort of working with I think Andrew really made a difference by his natural nature as a producer and as a as a fan, and it would be cool to do more.
I mean, theoretically speaking, you all could turn right around and punch out another record, I'm sure, if you wanted to.
I would love to do that. You know, I'd love to start something just to record for 3 days and just do some more songs, because it was so spatty. You know, one of the last songs we recorded was Dark Matter, and that's a Matt Cameron song. So that's another avenue of how we were writing. But Matt Cameron came in and just sat down to warm up on his drums and just started playing that drum beat, whatever that Dark Matter drum beat. And we were just, everybody was just like, looked at each other and was like, that is so amazing how he just goes in there and sits and plays that. And we recorded it while he was out there. He didn't realize it. And we asked him, can we make a little loop of this? And we all sort of took it home. And Jeff and I ended up writing two different kinds of things to this loop. And the next day we all came in and we just took those two ideas. Mike had a bridge, and we just took that beat and just laid those riffs across that beat. And then we just played it as a band, and that's what it turned into. And again, that song probably represents more than any other song sort of the act of building something together, you know. But that showed us something about how we can, you know, having a Matt Cameron beat like that is something that we always dream of and we always want it and we're always encouraging. And we found a road in, you know, to some of that, because, you know, we'll give you some chords. They're easy, you know. Give me a good beat. If we have a great beat, we're done. The song's done. You know what I mean?
It's such a powerful song. Yeah. Have you seen the, there's a video, Justin from the band The Darkness. He sort of deconstructs songs, and he did Dark Matter. Have you watched that?
Yeah. I watched it. It was pretty good. He's funny. He's a funny guy. And he's real casual. I love it. His whole style is. And the fact that he sit there with a guitar and like try to figure out something in real time, he's pretty good to be able to kind of do that. I mean, it's like one of those kind of players that can kind of figure anything out. They know, they're confident they're going to get to the heart of it, you know, even if they quite get it.
Well, so I was wondering, like, for something that you all, you know, sort of just create and to have it so deconstructed in that way, like, yeah. I don't know if that's just like funny, surreal or whatever, or if you actually get to find something that you didn't notice.
He didn't find anything that I didn't notice. And his, you know, his, well, it's, you know, his whole breakdown of Andrew Watt. Well, Andrew Watt's the guy you bring in when you're old. And, you know, it's like sort of, he's already doesn't even, he's putting the cart in front of the horse a little bit there, I think. But I was just amused and thrilled that, you know, I mean, anytime the English like you, you're just totally excited because, you know, it's just, I don't know why I need their praise, but it sure is fun when you get it.
I certainly love the magic that you all have made on this one with Andrew, with the group. I mean, there is nothing certain at this point that any artist can continue this. And the fact that you all do, it really is completely mind blowing. Congratulations. It is always a pleasure to talk to you about this stuff.
Really nice to see you, Kyle. Thanks for having me on.
My thanks to Stone. You can find all of our interviews further in this series as well. Thanks to you for checking out the episode. Hit that subscribe button before you get out of here. That way you'll get three interviews sent to you every single week, just like this one. New and every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at Spotify, Apple Podcast, at NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or again, anywhere you get your podcasts from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And after that, head over to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show Monday through Friday, starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. You get 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in new music. There's bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. In fact, one of my recent shows featured some classics and favorites from Joni Mitchell, Stevie Wonder, Steve Earle, Royal Otis, Liana LaHavas, Corey Henry, Steven Sanchez, Alanis Morissette, Hole, Lucinda Williams, Health, Bibio Sound Machine, Tom Waits, Lake Street Dive, Tenacious D, Gary Clark Jr., Calexico, Jenny Lewis, English Teacher, The Pixies, War Paints, and my interview with Neil Finn of Crowded House. Just an example of what you can hear every weeknight starting at 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always the same. It's at Kyle Meredith. So I do hope you like and follow along. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
I appreciate, you know, you paying attention to Loose Groove, and you've been doing a lot of nice stuff. So thank you so much for listening.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.